This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes. You are listening to the Running Channel podcast with me, Andy Badley, Rick Kelsey in the corner pressing buttons and making us sound wonderful, and Sarah Hartley, square brackets, ad lib insults.
Andy!
One job!
You don't know how you just sounded, D.
Oh, have you just made us into monsters?
Just made you into a monster, yeah.
Right, let's
crack on. I said you were making us sound beautiful.
Yeah, I am making you sound beautiful, also into monsters, because we're back. We're back in London.
Finally.
Yes, we are. And I'm to let people behind the curtain, because we're recording this actually before the next podcast comes out. So it's only 4 days post-marathon. Did I tell anyone I did a marathon?
No.
No, you haven't mentioned it at all.
When did
but
you do
I tell
that?
You what, it looks like you've run a marathon day four.
I feel awful today. This is the zenith.
Have you had any
apogee?
Sleep?
One of those things which means the worst, the bottom of like the of the trough of feeling terrible.
Right, well, as Andy struggles to get his words out, should we crack on?
Indeed. Which words did you just use? Because I don't think they work.
No, I think you're right. I think this is an indicator of how tired I am 4 days after
Did you
running.
Try to use a big word and it completely
yeah.
backfired?
Zenith. Both zenith and apogee mean the exact opposite
the top.
Of what
they
I
mean
meant.
The top.
Yes, they
really
do.
Yeah.
They
mean the top. Yeah, no offence, Andy, but you're definitely not at the top.
No, I'm at the bottom of my game.
I think what you need is a little bit more sleep, which ties in perfectly to what we're going to be talking about in a second. How much sleep do you need to run? So we'll be covering that in a minute. But Rick, how's your week been?
It's been really good. So obviously we got back from Valencia. What were we doing there again?
Andy was running a marathon.
Oh yeah, that's
apparently.
It. Yeah. We got back. I did actually manage to get out for a run on Tuesday morning, which is really nice, because obviously the contrast in our runs in Valencia to a contrast in our runs back here, it's been incredibly cold in the UK, whereas over in Valencia, my gosh, 22, 23, 24 degrees this week. Why don't we live there?
Yeah, I know. We should move.
I agree. Although it seems that when you go to Valencia, you get lazier. So actually you got back to the UK and went for a run.
Yes.
Whereas
I went for a run in Valencia as well.
Yeah, but both of those things were
Sarah
way more energetic.
Went together.
Yeah, but those things were way more energetic than your attempt to support me on marathon day. where you went to 2 points on the course, one of which was right outside your hotel and the other was the finish.
Hey.
How did you know the first point was outside my hotel? I never told you that.
Because you said your hotel was near the port.
Oh, you've put two and two together.
Yes, we have deduced.
Oh, that's the zenith of your capabilities right there.
Excellent.
Right, how are you feeling, Andy, post-marathon?
I'm feeling devoid of pinaz.
Rick's favourite made-up word.
My body actually feels okay from a soreness perspective. It wasn't great for a day or so, but the spa sorted that right out.
Yeah, thanks, Rick, for hooking us up.
You're so welcome. I'm so glad you joined me.
Have we covered that? Well, we did cover that in the podcast. Yeah. Oh, no, we didn't. But guys, we went to the spa.
I think we said we were going to.
It was amazing.
We did. We spent the morning in Rick's favourite place.
The spa.
Relaxing together. It was wonderful. And then you've been disappointed since then, Sarah, haven't you? You've seen me going downstairs relatively sprightly.
Yeah, it's not that funny to watch you go up, downstairs, standing up, sitting down.
Yeah, I've been all right.
There's no more groaning than usual.
No, I just generally groan with age when I sit down, stand up pre-marathon. But yeah, now I've just been wiped out by tiredness. I feel that the actual exhaustion has hit me. So it's Thursday as we're recording. Race was on Sunday, so this is a real low point. Let's just use the actual language that I want. It's a low point.
Well, you missed out on, but it was very sensible to not go. We did one of our run clubs last night, which was very fun. We did a little Christmas lights tour, and that is the extent of my running this week.
Oh yeah, and how did you feel? Stiff? All right?
Oh, I was all right. I didn't run a marathon.
Oh, you were setting the pace at the front. Is that right?
Oh,
because I wasn't
gosh.
Running. This was
no,
your
I
job.
No, I wasn't. So I was part of, this is going to absolutely stitch Elliot from our team up, but I was part of the front runners with Elliot, and our job was to lead the front, get directions. So
to navigate a new route for Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah, because we were looking at loads of Christmas lights, there were quite a lot of road crossings.
And
so I said to Elliot, right, you get people across the road. I'll like make sure that like
if we do need to hold a bit of traffic back yeah. because we're not quite making the lights, I'll do that. And then I said to Elliot, when we get to 2.5K, stop.
Yes.
And he got to 2.5K, stopped.
Well, just in the middle of the road?
No, as in like got to a street corner and stopped. And then I was quite far back at that point because I'd been helping people. And then he saw me come into view and then carried on running. I essentially did an interval session sprinting as fast as I could in my little Christmas hat.
You look lovely. Yeah, you look lovely.
It was so funny.
Elliot's one of those people who, you know, if you work in an office, you used to seeing people dress a certain way, but then they put on their sports gear. I saw him today and was like, I don't know who you are.
He it's is a little bit fast. Like when you... He is like literally, is Andy and Elliot are the same person.
No way.
Yeah, they are.
What, you mean he could hold a camera like Freddie?
But it was amazing that you say that because you walked into the office today dressed exactly like Del Boy from Only Fools and Horses.
I do love
it. Yeah, the beautiful camel coat on it.
When Rick comes from one of his other jobs, it's a joy.
I think it's genuinely a joy. His other job was selling knockoff goods in East London somewhere.
Yeah, how much is it for a pair of window frames?
Oh, a couple of pineapples.
Was it you that out in Valencia I was teaching Cockney rhyming slang?
No.
Maybe it was
potentially. What time of the day was it?
Apples and pears. What does that mean?
Apples and pears.
Come on, Rick.
Little bit of this and a little bit of that.
No, apples and pears. Stairs.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm not Del Boy then.
No, you wouldn't pass the test. Should we talk about sleep?
Yes. Yeah, let's talk about it. None of us have really had much sleep.
Have we all had enough?
I haven't had enough, no. But I know some stuff about sleep. So
do you?
A little bit, maybe.
Let's dive into it. I feel like it's important to caveat this with, we are not sleep experts. We are not scientists. We have not done sleep studies. But we have researched this and have experienced ourselves in a lot of running and how to get the best sleep for that. So that's kind of what we're going to talk through.
I also know how important it was in my career previously to nap in the afternoons. There's various bits of science about how long you should nap for and whether that's going to, and what time of day to do it to avoid having a knock-on impact to your sleep in the evening. I also remember, this is years ago, reading a book all about sleep and about something called, there's things called sleep inertia. There's also, I forget the word that was used for it, but your ability to kind of fall asleep, mm-hmm. You can use that up. So if you, for example, fell asleep at 5 or 6 p.m. in front of the TV and then woke up and then went to bed upstairs and then tried to get back to sleep again, you would have kind of used up some of that ability to fall asleep.
Interesting. Well, should we start off by tackling what happens when you sleep? Like, why is sleep actually related to running?
Yes.
So this was a lot of what I was researching because we put this in a video recently and I thought it was interesting. So human growth hormone, HGH, I know you don't like abbreviations, Rick.
Thank you.
The human growth hormone is kind of the biggest factor involved in like repairing your body, and it happens the most when you're asleep. Interestingly, it also does happen through vigorous exercise, but majority of it is going to happen during sleep.
Yeah, and growth hormone, it all makes sense because if you remember any famous doping scandals in the past, say Marion Jones, the Barco scandal, Victor Conte, all of that stuff from the 2000s, their cocktail of performance enhancing drugs, one of the main ingredients was human growth hormone, because that allows you to recover. And so often people think that people cheating in sport are taking things that make them stronger or faster, which is true sometimes. But loads of the main things that have made people better at sport, often the cheating still requires that they train really hard. So it's not like these people don't work hard, but they're taking something like growth hormone to allow them to train super hard day after day after day.
Yeah,
whereas I'm feeling beaten up at the moment and not recovering fast enough.
Yeah, because you're like, if we take you, for example, marathon recovery, when you go out for a run or kind of do any exercise, you are creating loads of kind of tiny microscopic tears in your muscles. So that's why you need the rest and recovery, because the HGH, human growth hormone, is operating when you're asleep in order to repair those muscles. And then the adaptation that people want to get in order to get faster, run for longer, feel a bit stronger, that's where that happens, because you create those tears and then they repair back a little bit stronger.
Only when you're sleeping?
Well, so this is the thing. When you do vigorous exercise, so quite often, I was reading a study this morning and they did a test a while back on athletes, and it was kind of when they were hitting their like lactate threshold with runners. So when you're going like quite hard, that was also when the growth hormone was released, which kind of marries up as like when you're pushing yourself to a certain level, it will get
stimulating released. Your body to grow and repair tissue, I guess.
Yeah.
That makes sense. To make musculature stronger and have all of that adaptation, but you don't get adaptation without rest.
I see. And that's because your body's not doing anything else, so it can concentrate on fixing itself.
Yeah, but I think it's more complicated than that, isn't it? I think the different stages of sleep perform different functions.
So they're quite often, and you can see if anyone else is obsessed with like sleep on their watch, you have sleep cycles. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, because this is the research you've done, you've got like a 4-hour sleep cycle.
Yeah.
And within that, you've got like deeper sleep.
Yeah, I think a sleep cycle actually is 90 minutes to 110 minutes, the stuff I read. You go, but the number four is more that most people have around 4 sleep cycles in total each night.
I see.
Oh, right,
so you go through 4 or 5 sleep cycles over the night, and you cycle through the 5 different stages of sleep.
In every
cycle?
Yes. Well, ideally, but as you get older, you spend less time in some of the key stages. So, and if you get disturbed at various points, it kind of resets. And so if you have a restless night's sleep, then you might not be getting all of the restorative elements of sleep that you need. So just being in bed for a certain amount of time, you might not go through all of these phases as effectively. So the 5 stages, Sarah's testing me. I've got it wrong. There's 4 stages. One is waking. So it's like, you're awake at the beginning and then you're falling asleep.
Yeah.
So,
but some people might have that.
Yeah, you might wake up like slightly awake and be a little bit more alert during the night, during those phases. But the other 4 stages, sorry, you've got N1, N2 and N3, which are all non-REM sleep periods. And then you've got the REM sleep. So REM, rapid eye movement, is what REM stands for.
And what is REM?
So the N3, which is the final stage of non-REM sleep, is the really deep sleep. So that's the period where all of the stuff that we've been talking about, it's the deepest period where it's hardest to wake up from. It's the bit that as you age, you might spend less time in that period. And this is where the kind of tissue repair, building bone and muscles, strengthening your immune system, that's, I guess, the longer you can spend in N3, the third stage of non-REM sleep, then the better. It's also the stage during which sleepwalking, night tremors, and potentially, I suppose more for children, bedwetting can take place then as well.
What, in stage 3 or 4?
Yes.
Yeah. And then REM is 4.
Yes.
So if you've got a little baby, you won't get much REM because you might get woken up quite a bit.
Yeah, you might never get to
that point.
That's what's interesting though, is that like either if you're getting woken up within that cycle, so you're not getting to the end of it because of like children or something else or like noise disturbance, then you're not completing that cycle. But also what I find interesting is that I've quite often had like 2 nights back to back where the first night I've maybe got 7 or 8 hours sleep. The second night I've got the exact same time, but my watch will say like, I'll get a lower sleep score on my Garmin and it will say like non-restorative.
Yeah.
Probably because I haven't gone into the right cycles.
Yeah. And it's also the reason that if you go to bed at a different time each night, but your alarm is set for the same time the following morning, then on some mornings you might wake up just before your alarm or might wake up with your alarm feeling great. Whereas sometimes if that alarm happens to go off in the middle of one of the stages of sleep where you're really deeply asleep, then that's when you feel awful if you wake up during that period.
I see. So this is why it's, if you can, and it's not, you know, it's not always possible, this is why you should kind of try and keep a cycle that you're going to sleep at the same time, which is why it's quite hard for shift workers to get into that deep sleep, because their sleep is constantly flicking to and fro because they're going to bed at different times of night. So I suppose in a running context, then it's important for us to get that REM before we have a race or a big training session the day before. So I suppose from a running perspective, then does that mean we should be going to bed early so we get into those cycles?
I think it's consistency as much as it is timing. Like I think there's some people who'd say the logic is that everyone has a kind of amount of sleep that they need and is quite different from individuals. But there's also really good data that once you dip below a certain amount of sleep each night on average, that you like you dramatically impair your cognitive function and your ability to adapt to exercise. And I can't remember the numbers, but I think it's like 6 or 7 hours a night. So that's where kind of 8 hours comes from as a good solid average. Like you're pretty safe with those numbers. Some people might need a bit more. Some people can definitely get away with less.
There are lots of like, this is one thing as well in terms of like how much exact sleep do you need? There's no kind of right or wrong answer. There's different like watches now can give you sleep advice based on your day as well as the amount of sleep that you've had before. I actually found when I was researching, I'd never heard this before, but someone was saying that in a running context that you can apply like 1 minute of extra sleep per night per mile of exercise that you do a week. Don't know whether how much science there is behind this, but I thought that was quite interesting. And that like if you're doing 30 miles a week, 8 hours is your baseline, but you should aim for 8.5. If you're doing, because this is what I wanted to ask, so like back when you were training as a professional athlete and you were doing, I'm guessing, like 100 mile weeks,
pretty close to that,
that would then equate to 100 minutes, just under 2 hours, so 8 hours, like just under 10 hours sleep. Is that how much you were aiming for?
I used to sleep a lot. I would be in bed relatively early, probably like 10:30, and then I would definitely, no children to wake me up.
I 10:30. That I'm in my third cycle by this point nowadays.
I was gonna say even I'm in bed by then.
I just didn't find I could go to bed earlier than that because I'd have done a second training run at like 5 or 6 o'clock.
Okay.
Oh, fair.
So then by the time I'd eaten and tried to wind down a little bit, it's 10 o'clock. And then I would have slept until between 7 and 8 in the morning. So yeah, that if I'd slept till 7, that's 9 hours.
Add a little nap in.
And I would have probably anything from half an hour to a 90-minute nap in the afternoon on tough days at like straight after lunch kind of time, which was a luxury, but I'm convinced it made a massive difference.
It is interesting though, like if you compare the sleep schedules of a toddler with a professional athlete, they're like exactly the same. But if you look at like what
12 hours a night and then a couple of hours in the afternoon.
But then if you look at what both parties are trying to achieve, a professional athlete is trying to adapt, grow, like get faster, get stronger, whatever discipline they're training for.
And then parents are just trying to achieve just some peace and quiet.
And a toddler is trying to like get a bit taller, grow a bit, develop some cognitive function.
Yes,
I'm sure that's what you were doing in your professional career as well.
Yeah, did you not get much sleep as a toddler?
Rude.
Sorry. I think just whilst this is loosely related to running, isn't it? We're just generally talking about sleep. There's so many things that are tied to sleep, and you could be doing the most incredible, consistent training. You could have your nutrition absolutely nailed in. You could really trust in the process of everything that you're doing. You could be doing the foam rolling, the recovery, everything to a T. But then if you don't get enough sleep, it's pointless. And it's arguably, I would say, better to concentrate on consistent, high quality sleep than it is to worry about the 1% things that might give you those marginal gains in your running.
Because like you
probably get 5 or 10% gain from better sleep compared to, obviously don't quote me on those numbers.
But. One thing as well with sleep is that it's not necessarily going to be one bad night's sleep is going to ruin everything. Because that's the other thing as well that I've massively taken on board is that the earlier you can prepare in terms of sleep for a race, the better. Like, because except like if you're someone that gets really nervous before race day and you're not going to have a good night's sleep, that's okay. But just make sure that like when you're not so nervous in 5 days before you're getting your sleep hygiene is really, really good.
Yeah. We always
sleep hygiene.
Yeah. Have you not heard that term?
Oh yeah. That's about how you look after your environment and your kind of routine of going to sleep.
So, do you want to know my sleep hygiene?
Go on.
So the personal things that I now implement because I'm slightly obsessed with sleep is I wear an eye mask all year round.
Ditto.
Because I find light affects me so much.
Yeah.
And so like I could get 7-6 hours sleep with an eye mask and it feels more like 8 hours sleep.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely love it.
Without an eye mask, I could have 10 hours sleep and I feel
completely
rubbish.
Completely. You have your cucumbers in yours as well. Right?
And I doses and scent before midnight.
Love it. My God. Yeah, like sleep spray. But then also sleep hygiene could be stuff like, what are you doing just before you like go to bed? Are you, there's really little things like.
You must be bad with blue light before bed, Sarah.
Yeah, I really try not, like I've tried.
So yeah, no phone in your bedroom is
no
a big
No phone in your bedroom. Don't charge your phone next to
your bed.
Where you're sleeping, next to your
Put
bed.
It at the Put bottom, it, bottom of the bed.
Yeah, the other side of the room if you want to use it as an alarm. Other things are like if you are exercising really, really close to like going to sleep, that might have an impact as well. So like if you can push it a bit earlier into the evening. Even stuff like I heard someone once talking about if you have like a really hot like shower or bath, just before you go to bed, your body is then still like trying to cool itself down. So that can slightly affect your sleep.
Yeah. So it's the, you need to, if you're going to get hot in a bath, which is really relaxing, you need to allow enough time because it's not the hot bath that makes you sleepy. It's the your body cooling down helps you go to sleep. So it's the, if you sort of jump from a hot bath or shower straight into bed and then stay warm, then it'll take a while to get to sleep because your body's trying to regulate itself. But it's that reduction in body temperature that makes you sleepy.
Have you got any good sleep hygiene? I heard three kids is amazing for great sleep.
Yes, that's perfect.
or six.
Or six.
Oh, there's a lot of speculation on how many children I have. Actually, this was one of the best comments that I got on that we got on a Running Channel Instagram over the weekend. Someone had commented, "Is there anything that Andy can't do?" And someone just replied, "Birth control." Absolutely savage.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was actually great to see all your children because they actually filled, you know, kilometer 1 to 42 of the race. Just
stop
like
it.
Lining the whole way.
I couldn't get a space to cheer you on. That's why I wasn't there.
Yeah. There was no room on the course. Yeah. Oh. And they said that once I ran a marathon, you wouldn't have anything to take the mickey out of me for. But it turns out, not true. sleep hygiene-wise, though, I don't always do it now, but I do occasionally do it if I feel like I need it. I used to do it a lot when I was competing, is essentially journaling before bed. And it can take a different form for anyone. But if anyone has experienced trying to fall asleep, particularly before a race, and the moment that you feel pretty calm, but the moment that the light switch turns off, you're lying there and the thoughts descend and your brain's really busy and all of that stuff. So I used to write the stuff I was worried about down before I went to bed. I used to go through each item one at a time, cross them out. Well, actually, no, I went through each item, wrote down a rational reason why I shouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
Or what I was going to do about it. So I'd done that bit of thinking and then crossed it out so it didn't need to be worried about anymore.
Stop the dark thoughts.
Yeah.
You can also get, like, there are loads of apps to help with sleep as well, whether that's like calming sounds, like meditation, exercises to get you into sleep.
Do use a meditation app as well for breathing exercise and stuff. When I've struggled with sleep, not often, but sometimes I wake up in the night and kind of focusing on my breathing can really help me to kind of, get back to sleep. And don't worry before a big event. It's normal not to sleep the night before. But I think you guys both said focus on the sleep leading up to that point.
You naturally get dark thoughts in the middle of the night that you can't quantify as you can in the daytime because there's nothing else to sound that off.
Yeah.
Because it's not normal because everything's dark.
I'd be terrified to be in your brain in the middle of the night.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm really interested to know if anyone has any like sleep tips that they use before racing or before running, or is there anything else you'd like to know about sleep? Do email in podcast@therunningchannel.com. You're listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we've got some questions to cover. But first, a bit of news I'm very excited about. Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite shoes. Now, at The Running Channel, we bang on all the time about how if you want to run fast, you need to run slow. I'm talking about the 80-20 rule.
Yes, you need to do the vast majority of your training at an easier or steadier pace. And you need an everyday pair of running shoes that you trust to do that. And the Infinite Elite has brand new cushioning technology in the form of Under Armour's Hover Plus. So that's designed to support you for the whole of even your longest runs with extra cushioning and energy return. So that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes. Strava has a new function.
Mm-hmm.
Strava has DMs.
What does that mean? I know what that means. So direct messages on Strava.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is
Sarah's
basically...
Sarah's so excited she spends her life sliding into people's DMs.
Yeah.
I don't. I just...
Is this a dating feature?
No, there's no... not a dating feature. I'm just very excited that because after the marathon, we'll come onto this in a future episode because don't you worry, we hold ourselves to forfeits. But after Andy's marathon, he hit 5,000 Instagram followers and did his first ever post, yes, which was very exciting because now you're into the world of Instagram, trying to figure it out, like the little granddad you are. But yeah, you needn't have done it because there are now DMs on Strava.
Yeah, I could have just stuck to that because that was by far my most successful social network.
What I really loved though is, so I was like having a look at it earlier and it's really good. You can choose who can message you. So don't worry if you're on Strava and you're like, oh gosh, I'm going to have loads of messages. It's fine. So you can either do, have people who are following you can message you, no one can message you, or Andy, do you actually know what the word mutuals means?
So you're making fun of me now. You're looking at me and you've previously said to me, oh, I bet you're someone that types out the word and then uses both the word and the emoji that pops up on WhatsApp.
you are.
Hey, you want to, sometimes...
Yeah. Excited to see you, smiley face. Yeah. Smiley face emoji.
Sometimes you need to double down on the message. You want to make sure people are clear that you're... I get it. No,
I get
really
that.
I'm
with you on that.
R-O-F-L.
I bet you, though, mutuals means if you follow each other.
Yes.
Yeah. And then you can message freely.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
Like if you're at a party and like you meet someone and they're like, oh, they're a mutual.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've never said that out loud, but I know what it means. Thanks, Sarah. I mean, you should have backed me.
When might this be useful?
I just think it's very cool that like if you can now use that, if, you know, like if you do parkrun, for example, and it will show up, or if you do a race and it shows up as like you were running with X amount of people, because like if you both upload the same activity, it will show. Say for example, look, picture the scene.
I know where this is going.
If you went, this is amazing. If you've ever run a race and then there was someone running alongside you who like maybe in the middle of the marathon you had a little chat to, maybe you got on quite well, maybe you would have liked to slide into their DMs. Now you can. If they have the feature turned on.
Well, yes. I'm really excited to find out more about this feature because I never even knew I was on Strava. Andy pointed me out that I've been posting things for years.
Oh, have you got any new...
We clearly set you up a while ago and sorted you out with a watch and you hadn't realised that you were...
Yeah, there we go. Because I do time everything, but then I didn't know it automatically went to my Strava. So there you go.
Have you found any newer watch features recently or are you just sticking with the ones we already have?
Andy found it hilarious that the first thing, if you go down on my watch, the first thing that comes up is the parkrun barcode. Yes. And then literally the other day, I didn't touch the screen. It just moved onto health page and told me that my health was 33. I thought it was my age, but there you go.
Have you scored 33 health?
I scored 33 health.
33 health.
That is incredible.
Well,
I don't think that's very good.
I don't know. What is that? Is that my age?
I do.
No, it's not your... I'm assuming it's like a health snapshot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a snapshot of health. Oh, hang on. Look
at his little face. He's got no idea what's going on.
All right. It says body battery. It says body battery.
Yeah, body
battery.
Oh, is that what you meant? How much? So that depletes during the day as you use up your energy. It's the equivalent of your own phone battery score,
which is also affected by sleep.
Yes.
Okay. So I see. So my body battery being 33. What does that tell me?
It started at 100.
It started at 100?
Yeah.
I've got a long day.
The only thing is...
What am I going to be minus 133 by the end of the day?
No, you'll just be like, I think it can go down to five. Yeah. But the thing is that if you don't get... That's where sleep's really interesting because you would think, okay, I start each day with 100 body battery. No, because if you've had a poor night's sleep, you might only start at 60. Ah. So then you can take that into account and go like, don't come near me today. I'm going to be very grumpy because of my body battery.
I might move that above parkrun barcode.
Well, we added stress to your watch the other day.
Oh my gosh,
well,
yeah. How stressed are you right now?
How would I find that out?
I love this. This is my favourite thing of the week.
I found it. Stress. It's an orange button. It says my stress is 50.
Oh, 50. Mine's blue, 17. I'm just chilling. I'm just relaxing in the company of my two favourite people.
Do you want to know what mine is?
Yeah.
It's just gone up one as I'm saying this. 79, high stress.
Oh, high gosh. Stress.
So it's been a bad day.
This is quite telling, isn't it? Because you guys have a relaxing effect on me and I clearly have a very stressful effect on you. Devastating.
Gosh.
Please be my friends.
That stress, that is a really interesting chart. If you haven't got this on your watch, put it on. See if it's true. Any road.
Right.
Got to move on.
Questions?
Questions.
Questions.
Rick in Cornwall. Hi, Rick. I live in Cornwall, where it can be very windy and wet. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy running in the rain, but when it's windy, you don't really want to get out there sometimes. Cornwall is also not the flattest. So when it's like this, I run on the treadmill, doing things like tempo and threshold runs. Would you say running on a treadmill is a good way to train, and do any of you use one in your training sessions, and do you recommend them? I use the treadmill loads
in my recovery
after surgery, because I just found it a very safe place, as in the fact that I couldn't roll over, couldn't, you know, cause myself an unnecessary injury. I know, yeah. I could run flat the whole way.
It's not slippery, there's downhill. No dogs running out. Yeah.
No downhills, because physio is saying don't run any downhills, extra strain. So I have. You too?
Yeah, I think it's a good time of the year to be talking about it as well. It gets colder. The weather's a bit less controllable, particularly when it's snowing. And I know we've got people who are listening in
Canada.
And
loads of Canadians come up to us
in the US. Yeah, met a guy called Sandy out in Valencia who was going for an incredible.
He had a lot of hair.
Yes, had a chat to him on the shakeout run. So if you're listening, best regards. Hope it went well.
Oh yeah, I hope it went well.
Yeah, let us know. Get in touch. podcast@therunningchannel.com. But when it's snowy, sometimes it's just those conditions are unrunnable. And Rick's mentioning here that it can be windy and wet. Obviously, it's not flat in Cornwall either. Mm. So I would say that if you do all of your running on the treadmill and then try to run outside, you will notice it feels totally different. I don't particularly enjoy running on a treadmill because of the way my biomechanics are. I actually find it more difficult running on the treadmill.
Really?
I don't enjoy it. But sometimes that has a place, and I have used it when I've wanted to do a really controlled workout when it has been super cold outside, or when I've been rehabbing an injury like Rick, because it's flat, nice even surface, totally within my control. And I also sometimes, when I don't want to think about what pace I've got to run, I've been told run at this pace, so I just set the treadmill to that pace, and then I just have to stay running. I don't have to look at my watch and worry about fluctuating and losing my concentration.
It's a great one as well, like if you are doing especially like tempo and threshold, if you need to like learn that pace without thinking about it, you can just switch off and let the treadmill do the pacing for you.
And just remember to, a rough rule of thumb is to set the treadmill to a 1% gradient. So don't run it at 0%. Ideally 1%, to my knowledge, better represents outside running, because the treadmill is doing some of the work for you by...
Set it to a 1% uphill gradient.
Gradient. 1% uphill gradient, yeah.
But no, crack on, Rick. If it's wet, I don't blame you. Slip on the treadmill.
Yeah, just try and mix it up so that you don't. It's not a shock when you go outside. And just bear in mind that your mechanics will be a bit different. But take advantage. Maybe if you've got a mirror in front of the treadmill as well, you can focus on good running form, which I think actually segues nicely into the next question.
Yeah, and a treadmill also takes up a lot of room. It's like having an extra child. I need to know a lot about that. Liam from Ireland. Gosh. I'm very conscious about my running form, but have a piece of jog and I'd like clarified. I've often heard Andy saying in a really strict voice, run tall, hips high.
You've added really? Strict voice there, Rick. You've added strict
voice. Is
that
voice. How you shout it?
Yeah, run tall, hips high. That's given me a few flashbacks.
What does hips high mean in real terms? I've tried to Google it, but can't get a definitive answer. Love the podcast and the YouTube channel. Keep up the good work, says
Thanks, Liam.
Oh, great. That's a good question. Okay, so I do say this a lot, and perhaps it's a bit of an assumption from me that it makes sense. Mm. Often, if I'm doing it at a run club or something, people can see what I'm doing, so it makes more sense. But if you think about, if you've ever watched anyone in the last 100 meters of a race, they might look like they're sitting a little bit.
Right.
So they're never in this nice kind of good running form position when they make contact with the ground. It's almost like they've made contact with the ground and they've just sagged backwards into a little bit. So if you imagine the very, very beginning of a squat movement where you, instead of pushing your knees out forward, you push your bum backwards a little bit to start the squat, that would be not having high hips. Mm-hmm. And as people get tired, their core muscles can't kind of hold them in a good position and they just start to fatigue, then that's often the position you end up running in. And by high hips, I mean you push your hips, almost like thrusting your hips up and forwards to keep that good posture with your hips kind of directly underneath your shoulders. You're not sitting back into that squat position. So when you make contact with the ground, you're pushing forwards with your foot directly underneath your hips, almost with a straight-ish leg, not with like a massive bend in your leg as you're kind of sitting into this kind of fatigue
position. I just don't understand how you'd stop it though. If it's the last 100 meters and basically you've done it accidentally.
You squeeze your glutes. Yeah, concentrate on squeezing your glutes to have that leg drive on contacting with the ground. Because what it is you make contact with the ground, and on doing that, if your glutes aren't giving you the strength and support that you need and your core muscles in your stomach aren't supporting your pelvis either, then on that impact, your kind of your bottom naturally kind of almost impacts and goes down towards the ground. But if you're thinking about squeezing your glutes and core to stay strong in that position, then you can stay nice and tall. So hopefully that makes sense.
How I like to think of it is, you know, when you like need to run to the toilet when you suddenly just feel like you need a wee.
Mm-hmm.
That's wrong. That's like when you
shuffle.
You don't want that kind of shuffle.
Normal walking.
Yeah, it's you wanna run as if you're like answering the door to a person you really like, as opposed to running away from said person needing a wee.
I've got a final point of maybe a way of thinking about it to exaggerate the movement when you're not fatigued. Is like if you think about really arching your back, and twisting. Imagine your pelvis. You've like got your hands on your hips or something. You're twisting it forwards, so the front of your pelvis is going down. Okay. The back of your pelvis is coming up, so your bum is sticking out more. That's kind of the position that you don't want to be in. Pelvic tilt. So you want to kind of use your core muscles at the front to squeeze, that holds the front of your pelvis kind of up and stops it from dipping forwards. And then you're squeezing your glutes at the back to stop your pelvis rotating, basically, and to have that nice strong foot contact. So that might allow you to feel what I'm talking about in terms of bad low hips. And then you want to have the opposite movement when you're running to hold them strong and
really
and tall.
Really good hand action there. If only we'd filmed this podcast. Very, very good. Very good. Yeah, very good. Before we go, Sarah, you've got a favour to ask.
I have got a favour to ask, yes. Firstly, thank you so much to all of the different people who have tagged us in their Strava art.
Lovely.
Including Hillary, who did the privacy thing, so I could actually see her spelling it out.
Oh, nice.
So good. This week's favour is Andy's run a marathon, sadly. So we can't tease him about this anymore. So I would like you to email in podcast@therunningchannel.com. Which race or running event or challenge would you like the three of us to take on next year that we can tease Andy about, because he'll hate it. Me and Rick will enjoy it. Nice. And then we can do a podcast episode about it. I was thinking as a starter for 10.
Yes.
A really muddy, like obstacle course.
Okay.
Kind of 10K.
Okay. He wouldn't like that, don't you think?
Yeah, that's exactly why. And especially, Andy hates heights. So I was thinking if we could do, have you ever done like Go Ape?
Go Ape.
Yeah. So if we could do like a Go Ape 10K or like where you're doing like high obstacle course, if there could be a zip wire at the end, let us know. Anywhere in the UK would be great.
Why is this all about making me miserable? I thought you guys were going to go straight to wine. The Running Home for Christmas podcast, we've had a lot of comments about your coherency as you'd had like a fair bit of
I think we're
G-dog.
Extremely coherent.
G-dog the Gavi.
The G-dog.
Incredible. But there are wine marathons, so maybe we should just double up. Wine as hydration on the way around.
Yeah.
I mean, what could go wrong? I tell you what, we will, as always, leave it up to you to decide. So email in and we will see you, as Rick frantically waves his hands.
He's like, stop it, guys, stop talking.
Should we talk about something else? Should we just drag it out?
No. He's going to have some kind of aneurysm.
We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite everyday running shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.